was scratched and drenched with sweat. "Annabeth," he called, "help me, please." She ran forward. I tried to cry out. "He's a traitor. Don't trust him." But my voice didn't work in the dream. Annabeth had tears in her eyes. She reached down like she wanted to touch Luke's face, but at the last second, she hesitated. "What happened?" she asked. "They left me here." Luke groaned. "Please, it's killing me." I couldn't see what was wrong with him. He seemed to be struggling against some invisible curse, as though the fog were squeezing him to death. "Why should I trust you?" Annabeth asked. Her voice was filled with hurt.
"You shouldn't," Luke said. "I've been terrible to you, but if you don't help me, I'll die."
"Let him die," I wanted to scream. Luke had tried to kill us in cold blood too many times. He didn't deserve anything from Annabeth. Then the darkness above Luke began to crumble, like a cavern roof in an earthquake. Huge chunks of black rock began falling. Annabeth rushed in just as a crack appeared and the whole ceiling dropped. She held it somehow, tons of rock. She kept it from collapsing on her and Luke just with her own strength. It was impossible. She shouldn't have been able to do that. Luke rolled free, gasping.
"Oh, thanks," he managed.
"Help me hold it," Annabeth groaned. Luke caught his breath. His face was covered in grime and sweat. He rose unsteadily.
"I knew I could count on you."
He began to walk away as the trembling blackness threatened to crush Annabeth.
"Help me,"
she pleaded.
"Oh, don't worry," Luke said. "Your help is on the way. It's all part of the plan. In the meantime, try not to die."
The ceiling of darkness began to crumble again, pushing Annabeth against the ground. I sat bolt upright in bed, clawing at the sheets. There was no sound in my cabin except the gurgle of the saltwater spring. The clock on my nightstand read just after midnight. Only a dream, but I was sure of two things. Annabeth was in terrible danger, and Luke was responsible. Chapter 6. An Old Dead Friend Comes to Visit. The next morning after breakfast, I told Grover about my dream. We sat in the meadow watching the satyrs chase the wood nymphs through the snow. The nymphs had promised to kiss the satyrs if they got caught, but they hardly ever did. Usually the nymph would let the satyr get up a full head of steam. Then she'd turn into a snow-covered tree, and the poor satyr would slam into it head first and get a pile of snow dumped on him. When I told Grover my nightmare, he started twirling his finger in his shaggy leg fur.
"A cave ceiling collapsed on her?" he asked.
"Yeah. What the heck does that mean?" Grover shook his head.
"I don't know. But after what Zoe dreamed..."
"Whoa. What do you mean? Zoe had a dream like that?"
I don't know exactly. About 3 in the morning, she came to the big house and demanded to talk to Chiron. She looked really panicked."
"Wait, how do you know this?"
Grover blushed. "I was sort of camped outside the Artemis cabin."
"What for?"
"Just to be, you know, near them."
"You're a stalker with hooves."
"I am not. Anyway, I followed her to the big house and hid in a bush and watched the whole thing. She got real upset when Argus wouldn't let her in. It was kind of a dangerous scene."
I tried to imagine that. Argus was the head of security for camp. A big blonde dude with eyes all over his body. He rarely showed himself unless something serious was going on. I wouldn't want to place bets on a fight between him and Zoe Nightshade.
"What did she say?"
I asked.
Grover grimaced. "Well, she starts talking really old-fashioned when she gets upset, so it was kind of hard to understand, but something about Artemis being in trouble and needing the hunters. And then she called Argus a boil-brained lout. I think that's a bad thing. And then he called her... Whoa, wait, how could Artemis be in trouble? Finally Chiron came out in his pajamas and his horsetail and curlers and...
He wears curlers in his tail?
Grover covered his mouth. Sorry, I said. Go on. Well, Zoe said she needed permission to leave camp immediately. Chiron refused. He reminded Zoe that the hunters were supposed to stay here until they received orders from Artemis. And she said...
Grover gulped.
She said, how are we to get orders from Artemis if Artemis is lost?
What do you mean lost? Like, she needs directions?
No, I think she meant gone, taken, kidnapped.
Kidnapped?
I tried to get my mind around that idea. How would you kidnap an immortal goddess? Is that even possible? Well, yeah, I mean, it happened to Persephone.
But she was like the goddess of flowers.
Grover looked offended. Springtime. Whatever. Artemis is a lot more powerful than that. Who would kidnap her, and why?
Grover shook his head miserably.
I don't know. Kronos?
He can't be that powerful already, can he?
The last time we'd seen Kronos, he'd been in tiny pieces. Well, we hadn't actually seen him. Thousands of years ago, after the big Titan God War, the gods had sliced him to bits with his own scythe and scattered his remains in Tartarus, which is like the gods' bottomless recycling bin for their enemies. 2 summers ago, Cronus had tricked us to the very edge of the pit and almost pulled us in. Then last summer, on board Luke's demon cruise ship, we'd seen a golden coffin where Luke claimed he was summoning the Titan Lord out of the abyss, bit by bit, every time someone new joined their cause. Cronus could influence people with dreams and trick them, but I didn't see how he could physically overcome Artemis if he was still like a pile of evil bark mulch.
I don't know, Grover said.
I think somebody would know if Cronus had reformed. The gods would be more nervous, but still, it's weird. You having a nightmare the same night as Zoe, it's almost like...
They're connected, I said. Over in the frozen meadow, a satyr skidded on his hooves as he chased after a red-headed tree nymph. She giggled and held out her arms as he ran toward her. Pop! She turned into a scotch pine and he kissed the trunk at top speed.
Ah, love, Grover said dreamily.
I thought about Zoe's nightmare, which she'd had only a few hours after mine.
I've got to talk to Zoe, I said. Before you do...
Grover took something out of his coat pocket. It was a 3-fold display like a travel brochure.
You remember what you said about how it was weird the hunters just happened to show up at Westover Hall? I think they might have been scouting us.
Scouting us? What do you mean? He gave me the brochure. It was about the hunters of Artemis. The front read, A Wise Choice for Your Future. Inside were pictures of young maidens doing hunter stuff, chasing monsters, shooting bows. There were captions like, Health Benefits, Immortality, and What It Means for You, and a Boy Free Tomorrow.
I found that in Annabeth's backpack, Grover said.
I stared at him.
I don't understand. Well, it seems to me, maybe Annabeth was thinking about joining.
I'd like to say I took the news well. The truth was, I wanted to strangle the hunters of Artemis one eternal maiden at a time. The rest of the day I tried to keep busy, but I was worried sick about Annabeth. I went to javelin throwing class, but the Ares camper in charge chewed me out after I got distracted and threw the javelin at the target before he got out of the way. I apologized for the hole in his pants, but he still sent me packing. I visited the Pegasus stables, but Selena Beauregard from the Aphrodite cabin was having an argument with one of the hunters, and I decided I'd better not get involved.
After that, I sat in the empty chariot stands and sulked. Down at the archery fields, Chiron was conducting target practice. I knew he'd be the best person to talk to. Maybe he can give me some advice, but something held me back. I had a feeling Chiron would try to protect me, like he always did. He might not tell me everything he knew. I looked the other direction. At the top of Half-Blood Hill, Mr. D and Argus were feeding the baby dragon that guarded the Golden Fleece. Then it occurred to me, no one would be in the big house. There was someone else, something else, I could ask for guidance. My blood was humming in my ears as I ran into the house and took the stairs. I'd only done this once before, and I still had nightmares about it. I opened the trap door and stepped into the attic. The room was dark and dusty and cluttered with junk, just like I remembered. There were shields with monster bites out of them, and swords bent in the shapes of demon heads, and a bunch of taxidermy, like a stuffed harpy and a bright orange python. Over by the window, sitting on a three-legged stool, was the shriveled-up mummy of an old lady in a tie-dyed hippie dress, the Oracle. I made myself walk toward her. I waited for the green mist to billow from the mummy's mouth, like it had before, but nothing happened. "Hi," I said. "What's up?" I winced at how stupid that sounded. Not much could be up when you're dead and stuck in the attic, but I knew the spirit of the Oracle was in there somewhere. I could feel a cold presence in the room, like a coiled sleeping snake. "I have a question," I said a little louder. "I need to know about Annabeth. How can I save her?" No answer. The sun slanted through the dirty attic window, lighting the dust motes dancing in the air. I waited longer. Then I got angry. I was being stonewalled by a corpse. "All right," I said. "Fine. I'll figure it out myself." I turned and bumped into a big table full of souvenirs. It seemed more clutter than the last time I was here. Heroes stored all kinds of stuff in the attic, quest trophies they no longer wanted to keep in their cabins, or stuff that held painful memories. I knew Luke had stored a dragon claw somewhere up here, the one that had scarred his face. There was a broken sword hilt labeled, "This broke and Leroy got killed, 1999. Then I noticed a pink silk scarf with a label attached to it. I picked up the tag and tried to read it. "Scarf of the goddess Aphrodite, recovered at Waterland, Denver, Colorado, by Annabeth Chase and Percy Jackson." I stared at the scarf. I'd totally forgotten about it. 2 years ago, Annabeth had ripped this scarf out of my hands and said something like, "Oh no, no love magic for you." I just assumed she'd thrown it away, and yet here it was. She'd kept it all this time? And why had she stashed it in the attic? I turned to the mummy. She hadn't moved, but the shadows across her face made it look like she was smiling gruesomely. I dropped the scarf and tried not to run toward the exit. That night after dinner, I was seriously ready to beat the hunters at Capture the Flag. It was going to be a small game. Only 13 hunters, including Bianca D'Angelo and about the same number of campers. Zoe Nightshade looked pretty upset. She kept glancing resentfully at Chiron, like she couldn't believe he was making her do this. The other hunters didn't look too happy either. Unlike last night, they weren't laughing or joking around. They just huddled together in the dining pavilion, whispering nervously to each other as they strapped on their armor. Some of them even looked like they'd been crying. I guess Zoe had told them about her nightmare. On our team, we had Beckendorf and two other Hephaestus guys. A few from the Ares cabin, though it still seems strange that Clarice wasn't around, the Stoll brothers, and Nico from Hermes cabin, and a few Aphrodite kids. It was weird that the Aphrodite cabin wanted to play. Usually they sat on the sidelines, chatted, and checked their reflections in the river and stuff, but when they heard we were fighting the hunters,
They were raring to go.
I'll show them love is worthless.
Selena Beauregard grumbled as she strapped on her armor.
I'll pulverize them.
That left Thalia and me. I'll take the offense, Thalia volunteered. You take defense. Oh, I hesitated because I'd been about to say the exact same thing, only reversed. Don't you think with your shield and all, you'd be better defense? Thalia already had Aegis on her arm, and even our own teammates were giving her a wide berth, trying not to cower before the bronze head of Medusa. Well, I was thinking it would make better offense, Thalia said. Besides, you've had more practice at defense. I wasn't sure if she was teasing me. I'd had some pretty bad experiences with defense on Capture the Flag. My first year, Annabeth had put me out as a kind of bait, and I'd almost been gored to death with spears and killed by a hellhound. Yeah, no problem, I lied. Cool. Thalia turned to help some of the Aphrodite kids, who were having trouble suiting up their armor without breaking their nails. Nico D'Angelo ran up to me with a big grin on his face. Percy, this is awesome! His blue feathered bronze helmet was falling in his eyes, and his breastplate was about 6 sizes too big. I wondered if there was any way I'd looked that ridiculous when I'd first arrived. Unfortunately, I probably had. Nico lifted his sword with effort.
Do we get to kill the other team?
Well, no. But the hunters are immortal, right? That's only if they don't fall in battle. Besides,
it would be awesome if we just, like, resurrected as soon as we were killed so we could keep fighting and...
Nico, this is serious. Real swords. These can hurt. He stared at me, a little disappointed, and I realized that I just sounded like my mother. Whoa. Not a good sign. I patted Nico on the shoulder. Hey, it's cool. Just follow the team. Stay out of Zoe's way. We'll have a blast. Kyron's hoof thundered on the pavilion floor.
Heroes, he called. You know the rules. The creek is the boundary line. Blue team, Camp Half-Blood, shall take the West Woods. Hunters of Artemis, Red team, shall take the East Woods. I will serve as referee and battlefield medic. No intentional maiming, please. All magic items are allowed. To your positions.
Sweet, Nico whispered next to me. What kind of magic items? Do I get one?
I was about to break it to him that he didn't when Thalia said,
Blue team, follow me.
They cheered and followed. I had to run to catch up and tripped over somebody's shield, so I didn't look much like a co-captain, more like an idiot. We set our flag at the top of Zeus's fist. It's this cluster of boulders in the middle of the West Woods that, if you look at it just the right way, looks like a huge fist sticking out of the ground. If you look at it from any other side, it looks like a pile of enormous deer droppings. But Kyron wouldn't let us call the place the poop pile, especially after it had been named for Zeus, who doesn't have much of a sense of humor. Anyway, it was a good place to set the flag. The top boulder was 20 feet tall and really hard to climb, so the flag was clearly visible, like the rules said it had to be, and it didn't matter that the guards weren't allowed to stand within 10 yards of it. I set Nico on guard duty with Beckendorf and the Stoll brothers, figuring he'd be safely out of the way. We'll send out a decoy to the left, Thalia told the team. Selena, you lead that.
Got it.
Take Laurel and Jason. They're good runners. Make a wide arc around the hunters. Attract as many as you can. I'll take the main raiding party around to the right and catch them by surprise. Everybody nodded. It sounded good, and Thalia said it with such confidence you couldn't help but believe it would work. Thalia looked at me.
Anything to add, Percy?
Yeah. Keep sharp on defense. We've got 4 guards, 2 scouts. That's not much for a big forest. I'll be roving. Yell if you need help.
And don't leave your post.
Thalia said.
Unless you see a golden opportunity, I added.
Thalia scowled. Just don't leave your post.
Right, unless Percy...
She touched my arm and shocked me. I mean, everybody can give static shocks in the winter, but when Thalia does, it hurts. I guess it's because her dad is the god of lightning. She's been known to fry off people's eyebrows.
Sorry,
Thalia said, though she didn't sound particularly sorry.
Now, is everybody clear?
Everybody nodded. We broke into our smaller groups.
The horn sounded, and the game began. Selena's group disappeared into the woods on the left. Thalia's group gave it a few seconds, then darted off toward the right.
I waited for something to happen. I climbed Zeus's fist and had a good view over the forest. I remembered how the hunters had stormed out of the woods when they fought the manticore, and I was prepared for something like that. One huge charge that could overwhelm us, but nothing happened. I caught a glimpse of Selena and her two scouts. They ran through a clearing, followed by five of the hunters, leading them deep into the woods and away from Thalia. The plan seemed to be working. Then, I spotted another clump of hunters heading to the right, bows ready. They must have spotted Thalia.
What's happening?
Nico demanded, trying to climb up next to me. My mind was racing. Thalia would never get through, but the hunters were divided. With that many on either flank, their center had to be wide open. If I moved fast, I looked at Beckendorf. Can you guys hold the fort? Beckendorf snorted.
Of course.
I'm going in. The Stoll brothers and Nico cheered as I raced toward the boundary line. I was running at top speed, and I felt great. I leaped over the creek into enemy territory. I could see their silver flag up ahead, only one guard who wasn't even looking in my direction. I heard fighting to my left and right, somewhere in the woods. I had it made. The guard turned at the last minute. It was Bianca D'Angelo. Her eyes widened as I slammed into her and she went sprawling in the snow.
Sorry,
I yelled. I ripped down the silver silk flag from the tree and took off. I was 10 yards away before Bianca managed to yell for help. I thought I was home free. Zip! A silvery cord raced across my ankles and fastened to the tree next to me. A tripwire fired from a bow. Before I could even think about stopping, I went down hard, sprawling in the snow.
Percy!
Thalia yelled off to my left.
What are you doing?
Before she reached me, an arrow exploded at her feet and a cloud of yellow smoke billowed around her team. They started coughing and gagging. I could smell the gas from across the woods, the horrible smell of sulfur.
No fair, Thalia gasped. Fart arrows are unsportsmanlike.
I got up and started running again. Only a few more yards to the creek and I had the game. More arrows whizzed past my ears. A hunter came out of nowhere and slashed at me with her knife, but I parried and kept running. I heard yelling from our side of the creek. Beckendorf and Nico were running toward me. I thought they were coming to welcome me back, but then I saw they were chasing someone, Zoe Nightshade, racing toward me like a cheetah, dodging campers with no trouble, and she had our flag in her hands.
No!
I yelled and poured on the speed. I was 2 feet from the water when Zoe bolted across to her own side, slamming into me for good measure. The hunters cheered as both sides converged on the creek. Chiron appeared out of the woods, looking grim. He had the Stoll brothers on his back, and it looked as if both of them had taken some nasty whacks to the head. Connor Stoll had 2 arrows sticking out of his helmet like antennae.
The hunters win,
Chiron announced without pleasure. Then he muttered,
for the 56th time in a row.
Perseus Jackson,
Thalia yelled, storming toward me. She smelled like rotten eggs, and she was so mad that blue sparks flickered on her armor. Everybody cringed and backed up because of Aegis. It took all my willpower not to cower.
What in the name of the gods were you thinking?
She bellowed.
I balled my fists. I'd had enough bad stuff happen to me for one day. I didn't need this. I got the flag, Thalia. I shook it in her face. I saw a chance and I took it. I was at their base, Thalia yelled. But the flag was gone. If you hadn't butted in, we would have won. You had too many on you. Oh, so it's my fault? I didn't say that. Ah! Thalia pushed me, and a shock went through my body that blew me backward 10 feet into the water. Some of the campers gasped. A couple of the hunters stifled laughs. Sorry, Thalia said, turning pale. I didn't mean to... Anger roared in my ears. A wave erupted from the creek, blasting into Thalia's face and dousing her from head to toe. I stood up. Yeah, I growled. I didn't mean to either. Thalia was breathing heavily. Enough, Chiron ordered, but Thalia held out her spear. You want some, seaweed brain? Somehow it was okay when Annabeth called me that. At least, I'd gotten used to it, but hearing it from Thalia was not cool. Bring it on, pinecone face! I raised Riptide, but before I could even defend myself, Thalia yelled, and a blast of lightning came down from the sky, hit her spear like a lightning rod, and slammed into my chest. I sat down hard. There was a burning smell. I had a feeling it was my clothes. Thalia, Chiron said, that is enough. I got to my feet and willed the entire creek to rise. It swirled up hundreds of gallons of water in a massive, icy funnel cloud. Percy! Chiron pleaded. I was about to hurl it at Thalia when I saw something in the woods. I lost my anger and my concentration all at once. The water splashed back into the creek bed. Thalia was so surprised, she turned to see what I was looking at. Someone, something was approaching. It was shrouded in a murky green mist, but as it got closer, the campers and hunters gasped. This is impossible, Chiron said. I'd never heard him sound so nervous. She has never left the attic. Never. And yet, the withered mummy that held the oracle shuffled forward until she stood in the center of the group. Mist curled around our feet, turning the snow a sickly shade of green. None of us dared move. Then her voice hissed inside my head. Apparently everyone could hear it, because several clutched their hands over the ears.
I am the spirit of Delphi, the voice said. Speaker of the prophecies of Phoebus Apollo, slayer of the mighty Python.
The oracle regarded me with its cold, dead eyes. Then she turned unmistakably toward Zoe Nightshade.
Approach, seeker, and ask.
Zoe swallowed. What must I do to help my goddess? The oracle's mouth opened, and green mist poured out. I saw the vague image of a mountain and a girl standing at the barren peak. It was Artemis. But she was wrapped in chains, fettered to the rocks. She was kneeling, her hands raised as if to fend off an attacker, and it looked like she was in pain. The oracle spoke.
Five shall go west to the goddess in chains. One shall be lost in the land without rain. The bane of Olympus shows the trail. Campers and hunters combined prevail. The Titan's curse must one withstand, and one shall perish by a parent's hand.
Then, as we were watching, the mist swirled and retreated like a great green serpent into the mummy's mouth. The oracle sat down on a rock and became as still as she'd been in the attic, as if she might sit by this creek for 100 years. Chapter 7. Everybody hates me but the horse. The least the Oracle could have done was walk back to the attic by herself. Instead, Grover and I were elected a carrier. I didn't figure that was because we were the most popular.
"Watch your head,"
Grover warned as we went up the stairs. But it was too late.
Bonk!
I whacked her mummified face against the trap door frame and dust flew.
"Oh, man!"
I set her down and checked for damage. Did I break anything?
"I can't tell,"
Grover admitted. We hauled her up and set her on her tripod stool, both of us huffing and sweating. Who knew a mummy could weigh so much? I assumed she wouldn't talk to me, and I was right. I was relieved when we finally got out of there and slammed the attic door shut.
"Well," Grover said, "that was gross."
I knew he was trying to keep things light for my sake, but I still felt really down. The whole camp would be mad at me for losing the game to the hunters, and then there was the new prophecy from the Oracle. It was like the spirit of Delphi had gone out of her way to exclude me. She'd ignored my question and walked half a mile to talk to Zoe. And she'd said nothing, not even a hint, about Annabeth.
"What will Chiron do?" I asked Grover. "I wish I knew."
He looked wistfully out the second floor window at the rolling hills, covered in snow.
"I want to be out there."
"Searching for Annabeth?" He had a little trouble focusing on me. Then he blushed.
"Oh, right, that too, of course."
"Why?" I asked. "What were you thinking?" He clopped his hooves uneasily.
"Just something the manticore said about the great stirring. I can't help but wonder. If all those ancient powers are waking up, maybe not all of them are evil."
"You mean Pan?" I felt kind of selfish because I'd totally forgotten about Grover's life ambition. The nature god had gone missing 2,000 years ago. He was rumored to have died, but the satyrs didn't believe that. They were determined to find him. They'd been searching in vain for centuries, and Grover was convinced he'd be the one to succeed. This year, with Chiron putting all the satyrs on emergency duty to find half-bloods, Grover hadn't been able to continue his search. It must have been driving him nuts.
"I've let the trail go cold," he said. "I feel restless, like I'm missing something really important. He's out there somewhere. I can just feel it."
I didn't know what to say. I wanted to encourage him, but I didn't know how. My optimism had pretty much been trampled into the snow out there in the woods, along with our capture the flag hopes. Before I could respond, Thalia tromped up the stairs. She was officially not talking to me now, but she looked at Grover and said,
"Tell Percy to get his butt downstairs."
"Why?"
I asked. "Did he say something?"
Thalia asked Grover.
He asked why.
"Dionysus is calling a council of cabin leaders to discuss the prophecy," she said. "Unfortunately, that includes Percy." The council was held around a ping-pong table in the rec room. Dionysus waved his hand and supplied snacks. Cheese Whiz, crackers, and several bottles of red wine. Then Chiron reminded him that wine was against his restrictions and most of us were underage. Mr. D sighed. With a snap of his fingers, the wine turned to Diet Coke. Nobody drank that either. Mr. D and Chiron, in wheelchair form, sat at one end of the table. Zoe and Bianca D'Angelo, who had kind of become Zoe's personal assistant, took the other end. Thalia and Grover and I sat along the right. And the other head counselors, Beckendorf, Selena Beauregard, and the Stoll brothers, sat on the left. The Ares kids were supposed to send a representative, too, but all of them had gotten broken limbs, accidentally, during Capture the Flag, courtesy of the hunters. They were resting up in the infirmary. Zoe started the meeting off on a positive note.
"This is pointless."
"Cheese Whiz,"
Grover gasped. He began scooping up crackers and ping-pong balls and spraying them with topping.
There is no time for talk, Zoe continued. Our goddess needs us. The hunters must leave immediately.
And go where? Chiron asked.
West,
Bianca said. I was amazed at how different she looked after just a few days with the hunters. Her dark hair was braided like Zoe's now, so you can actually see her face. She had a splash of freckles across her nose, and her dark eyes vaguely reminded me of someone famous, but I couldn't think who. She looked like she'd been working out, and her skin glowed faintly, like the other hunters, as if she'd been taking showers in liquid moonlight.
You heard the prophecy. 5 shall go west to the goddess in chains. We can get 5 hunters and go.
Yes, Zoe agreed. Artemis is being held hostage. We must find her and free her.
You're missing something, as usual, Thalia said. Campers and hunters combined prevail. We're supposed to do this together.
No, Zoe said. The hunters do not need thy help.
Your,
Thalia grumbled. Nobody has said thy in like 300 years, Zoe. Get with the times.
Zoe hesitated, like she was trying to form the word correctly.
We do not need your help.
Thalia rolled her eyes.
Forget it.
I fear the prophecy says you do need our help, Chiron said. Campers and hunters must cooperate.
Or do they?
Mr. D mused, swirling his Diet Coke under his nose like it had a fine bouquet.
One shall be lost, one shall perish. That sounds rather nasty, doesn't it? What if you fail because you try to cooperate?
Mr. D, Chiron sighed, with all due respect, whose side are you on?
Dionysus raised his eyebrows.
Sorry, my dear centaur. Just trying to be helpful.
We're supposed to work together, Thalia said stubbornly. I don't like it either, Zoe, but you know prophecies. You want to fight against one?
Zoe grimaced, but I could tell Thalia had scored a point. We must not delay, Chiron warned. Today is Sunday. This very Friday, December 21st, is the winter solstice.
Oh, joy, Dionysus muttered. Another dull annual meeting.
Artemis must be present at the solstice, Zoe said. She has been one of the most vocal on the council, arguing for action against Kronos' minions. If she is absent, the gods will decide nothing. We will lose another year of war preparations.
Are you suggesting that the gods have trouble acting together, young lady?
Dionysus asked.
Yes, Lord Dionysus.
Mr. D nodded.
Just checking. You're right, of course. Carry on.
I must agree with Zoe, said Chiron. Artemis's presence at the Winter Council is critical. We have only a week to find her, and possibly, even more important, to locate the monster she was hunting. Now we must decide who goes on this quest.
3 and 2, I said.
Everybody looked at me. Thalia even forgot to ignore me. We're supposed to have 5, I said, feeling self-conscious. 3 hunters, 2 from Camp Half-Blood. That's more than fair. Thalia and Zoe exchanged looks.
Well, Thalia said, it does make sense.
Zoe grunted.
I would prefer to take the hunters. We will need strength of numbers.
You'll be retracing the goddess's path, Chiron reminded her, moving quickly. No doubt Artemis tracked the scent of this rare monster, whatever it is, as she moved west. You will have to do the same. The prophecy was clear. The bane of Olympus shows the trail. What would your mistress say? Too many hunters spoil the scent. A small group is best.
Zoe picked up a ping pong paddle and studied it like she was deciding who she wanted to whack first. This monster, the Bane of Olympus. I have hunted at Lady Artemis's side for many years, yet I've no idea what this beast might be. Everyone looked at Dionysus, I guess because he was the only god present, and gods are supposed to know things. He was flipping through a wine magazine, but when everyone got silent, he glanced up.
Well, don't look at me. I'm a young god, remember? I don't keep track of all those ancient monsters and dusty titans. They make for terrible party conversation.
Chiron, I said, you don't have any ideas about the monster? Chiron pursed his lips. I have several ideas, none of them good, and none of them quite make sense. Typhon, for instance, could fit this description. He was truly a bane of Olympus, or the sea monster Keto. But if either of these were stirring, we would know it. They are ocean monsters the size of skyscrapers. Your father Poseidon would already have sounded the alarm. I fear this monster may be more elusive, perhaps even more powerful.
That's some serious danger you're facing, Connor Stoll said.
I liked how he said you and not we.
It sounds like at least two of the five are gonna die.
One shall be lost in the land without rain, Beckendorf said. If I were you, I'd stay out of the desert.
There was a muttering of agreement.
And the Titan's curse must one withstand, Selena said. What could that mean?
I saw Chiron and Zoe exchange a nervous look, but whatever they were thinking, they didn't share it.
One shall perish by a parent's hand, Grover said in between bites of cheese whiz and ping pong balls. How is that possible? Whose parent would kill them?
There was a heavy silence around the table. I glanced at Thalia and wondered if she was thinking the same thing I was. Years ago, Chiron had had a prophecy about the next child of the big three, Zeus, Poseidon, or Hades, who turned 16. Supposedly, that kid would make a decision that would save or destroy the gods forever. Because of that, the big three had taken an oath after World War II not to have any more kids. But Thalia and I had been born anyway, and now we were both getting close to 16. I remembered a conversation I'd had last year with Annabeth. I'd asked her if I was so potentially dangerous, why the gods didn't just kill me. Some of the gods would like to kill you, she'd said, but they're afraid of offending Poseidon. Could an Olympian parent turn against his half-blood child? Would it sometimes be easier just to let them die? If there were ever any half-bloods who needed to worry about that, it was Thalia and me. I wondered if maybe I should have sent Poseidon that seashell pattern tie for Father's Day after all.
There will be deaths, Chiron decided. That much we know.
Oh, goody,
Dionysus said. Everyone looked at him. He glanced up innocently from the pages of Wine Connoisseur magazine.
Ah, Pinot Noir is making a comeback. Don't mind me.
Percy is right, Selena Beauregard said. Two campers should go.
Oh, I see, Zoe said sarcastically. And I suppose you wish to volunteer?
Selena blushed.
I'm not going anywhere with the hunters. Don't look at me.
A daughter of Aphrodite does not wish to be looked at, Zoe scoffed. What would thy mother say?
Selena started to get out of her chair, but the Stoll brothers pulled her back.
Stop it,
Beckendorf said. He was a big guy with a bigger voice. He didn't talk much, but when he did, people tended to listen.
Let's start with the hunters. Which three of you will go?
Zoe stood.
I shall go, of course, and I will take Phoebe. She is our best tracker.
The big girl who likes to hit people on the head?
Travis Stoll asked cautiously. Zoe nodded. The one who put the arrows in my helmet? Connor added.
Yes, Zoe snapped. Why?
Oh, nothing, Travis said. Just that we have a t-shirt for her from the camp store. He held up a big silver t-shirt that said, Artemis, the Moon Goddess, Fall Hunting Tour, 2002, with a huge list of national parks and stuff underneath. It's a collector's item. She was admiring it. You want to give it to her? I knew the Stolls were up to something. They always were. But I guess Zoe didn't know them as well as I did. She just sighed and took the t-shirt.
As I was saying, I will take Phoebe, and I wish Bianca to go.
Bianca looked stunned.
Me? But I'm so new. I wouldn't be any good.
You will do fine, Zoe insisted. There is no better way to prove thyself.
Bianca closed her mouth. I felt kind of sorry for her. I remembered my first quest when I was 12. I had felt totally unprepared. A little honored, maybe, but a lot resentful and plenty scared. I figured the same things were running around in Bianca's head right now.
And for campers?
Kyron asked. His eyes met mine, but I couldn't tell what he was thinking.
Me!
Grover stood up so fast he bumped the ping-pong table. He brushed cracker crumbs and ping-pong ball scraps off his lap.
Anything to help Artemis.
Zoe wrinkled her nose.
I think not, Seta. You are not even a half-blood.
But he is a camper, Thalia said. And he's got a satyr's senses and woodland magic. Can you play a tracker song yet, Grover?
Absolutely.
Zoe wavered. I didn't know what a tracker song was, but apparently Zoe thought it was a good thing.
Very well, Zoe said. And the second camper?
I'll go.
Thalia stood and looked around, daring anyone to question her. Now, okay, maybe my math skills weren't the best, but it suddenly occurred to me that we'd reached the number 5 and I wasn't in the group.
Whoa, wait a sec, I said. I want to go too.
Thalia said nothing. Kyron was still studying me, his eyes sad.
Oh,
Grover said, suddenly aware of the problem.
Whoa, yeah, I forgot. Percy has to go. I didn't mean... I'll stay. Percy should go in my place.
He cannot, Zoe said. He is a boy. I won't have hunters traveling with a boy.
You traveled here with me, I reminded her.
That was a short-term emergency, and it was ordered by the goddess. I will not go across country and fight many dangers in the company of a boy.
What about Grover? I demanded. Zoe shook her head.
He does not count. He's a satyr. He's not technically a boy.
Hey,
Grover protested. I have to go, I said. I need to be on this quest.
Why? Zoe asked. Because of thy friend Annabeth.
I felt myself blushing. I hated that everyone was looking at me.
No. I mean, partly. I just feel like I'm supposed to go.
Nobody rose to my defense. Mr. D looked bored, still reading his magazine. Selena, the Stoll brothers, and Beckendorf were staring at the table. Bianca gave me a look of pity.
No, Zoe said flatly. I insist upon this. I will take a satyr if I must, but not a male hero.
Kyron sighed.
The quest is for Artemis. The hunters should be allowed to approve their companions.
My ears were ringing as I sat down. I knew Grover and some of the others were looking at me sympathetically, but I couldn't meet their eyes. I just sat there as Kyron concluded the council.
So be it, he said. Thalia and Grover will accompany Zoe, Bianca, and Phoebe. You shall leave at first light, and may the gods...
He glanced at Dionysus.
present company included, we hope, be with you.
I didn't show up for dinner that night, which was a mistake, because Karen and Grover came looking for me.
Percy, I'm so sorry, Grover said, sitting next to me on the bunk. I didn't know that you'd... honest.
He started to sniffle, and I figured if I didn't cheer him up, he'd either start bawling or chewing up my mattress. He tends to eat household objects whenever he gets upset.
It's okay,
I lied.
Really, it's fine.
Grover's lower lip trembled.
I wasn't even thinking. I was so focused on helping Artemis, but I promise I'll look everywhere for Annabeth. If I can find her, I will.
I nodded and tried to ignore the big crater that was opening in my chest.
Grover, Kyren said, perhaps you'd let me have a word with Percy?
Sure,
he sniffled.
Kyren waited.
Oh, Grover said, you mean alone. Sure, Kyren.
He looked at me miserably.
See, nobody needs a goat.
He trotted out the door, blowing his nose on his sleeve. Kyren sighed and knelt on his horse legs.
Percy, I don't pretend to understand prophecies.
Yeah, I said. Well, maybe that's because they don't make any sense. Kyren gazed at the saltwater spring gurgling in the corner of the room.
Thalia would not have been my first choice to go on this quest. She's too impetuous. She acts without thinking. She is too sure of herself.
Would you have chosen me?
Frankly, no, he said. You and Thalia are much alike.
Thanks a lot. He smiled.
The difference is that you are less sure of yourself than Thalia. That could be good or bad. But one thing I can say, both of you together would be a dangerous thing.
We could handle it.
The way you handled it at the creek tonight?
I didn't answer. He'd nailed me.
Perhaps it is for the best, Kyren mused. You can go home to your mother for the holidays. If we need you, we can call.
Yeah, I said. Maybe. I pulled Riptide out of my pocket and set it on my nightstand. It didn't seem that I'd be using it for anything but writing Christmas cards. When he saw the pen, Kyren grimaced.
It's no wonder Zoe doesn't want you along, I suppose. Not while you're carrying that particular weapon.
I didn't understand what he meant. Then I remembered something he told me a long time ago when he first gave me the magic sword.
It has a long and tragic history, which we need not go into.
I wanted to ask him about that, but then he pulled a golden drachma from his saddlebag and tossed it to me.
Call your mother, Percy. Let her know you're coming home in the morning. And, for what it's worth, I almost volunteered for this quest myself. I would have gone, if not for the last line.
One shall perish by a parent's hand. Yeah. I didn't need to ask. I knew Kyren's dad was Kronos, the evil Titan lord himself. The line would make perfect sense if Kyren went on the quest. Kronos didn't care for anyone, including his own children.
Kyren?
I said. You know what this Titan's curse is, don't you? His face darkened. He made a claw over his heart and pushed outward, an ancient gesture for warding off evil.
Let us hope the prophecy does not mean what I think. Now, good night, Percy. And your time will come. I'm convinced of that. There's no need to rush.
He said, your time, the way people did when they meant your death. I didn't know if Kyren meant it that way, but the look in his eyes made me scared to ask. I stood at the saltwater spring, rubbing Kyren's coin in my hand and trying to figure out what to say to my mom. I really wasn't in the mood to have one more adult tell me that doing nothing was the greatest thing I could do, but I figured my mom deserved an update. Finally, I took a deep breath and threw in the coin.
Oh, goddess, accept my offering.
The mist shimmered. The light from the bathroom was just enough to make a faint rainbow.
"Show me Sally Jackson," I said. "Upper East Side, Manhattan."
And there in the mist was a scene I did not expect. My mom was sitting at our kitchen table with some guy. They were laughing hysterically. There was a big stack of textbooks between them. The man was, I don't know, 30-something, with longish salt-and-pepper hair and a brown jacket over a black T-shirt. He looked like an actor, like a guy who might play an undercover cop on television. I was too stunned to say anything, and fortunately, my mom and the guy were too busy laughing to notice my iris message. The guy said,
"Sally, you're a riot. You want some more wine?"
I shouldn't. You go ahead if you want.
"Actually, I'd better use your bathroom. May I?"
"Down the hall," she said, trying not to laugh.
The actor dude smiled and got up and left.
"Mom," I said. She jumped so hard she almost knocked her textbooks off the table. Finally, she focused on me.
"Percy! Oh, honey! Is everything okay?"
"What are you doing?" I demanded. She blinked.
"Homework."
Then she seemed to understand the look on my face.
"Oh, honey, that's just Paul. Mr. Blowfish. He's in my writing seminar."
"Mr. Blowfish?"
"Blowfish. He'll be back in a minute, Percy. Tell me what's wrong."
She always knew when something was wrong. I told her about Annabeth, the other stuff too, but mostly it boiled down to Annabeth. My mother's eyes teared up. I could tell she was trying hard to keep it together for my sake.
"Oh, Percy."
"Yeah, so they tell me there's nothing I can do. I guess I'll be coming home." She turned her pencil around in her fingers.
"Percy, as much as I want you to come home..."
She sighed like she was mad at herself.
"As much as I want you to be safe, I want you to understand something. You need to do whatever you think you have to."
I stared at her.
"What do you mean?" "I mean, do you really, deep down, believe that you have to help save her? Do you think it's the right thing to do? Because I know one thing about you, Percy. Your heart is always in the right place. Listen to it."
You're telling me to go?" My mother pursed her lips.
"I'm telling you that you're getting too old for me to tell you what to do. I'm telling you that I'll support you, even if what you decide to do is dangerous. I can't believe I'm saying this."
"Mom."
The toilet flushed down the hall in our apartment.
"I don't have much time," my mom said. "Percy, whatever you decide, I love you, and I know you'll do what's best for Annabeth."
"How can you be sure?"
"Because she'd do the same for you."
And with that, my mother waved her hand over the mist and the connection dissolved, leaving me with one final image of her new friend, Mr. Blowfish, smiling down at her. I don't remember falling asleep, but I remember the dream. I was back in that barren cave, the ceiling heavy and low above me. Annabeth was kneeling under the weight of a dark mass that looked like a pile of boulders. She was too tired even to cry out. Her legs trembled. Any second, I knew she would run out of strength and the cavern ceiling would collapse on top of her.
"How is our mortal guest?"
a male voice boomed. It wasn't Kronos. Kronos's voice was raspy and metallic, like a knife scraped across stone. I'd heard it taunting me many times before in my dreams. But this voice was deeper and lower, like a bass guitar. Its force made the ground vibrate. Luke emerged from the shadows. He ran to Annabeth, knelt beside her, then looked back at the unseen man.
"She's fading. We must hurry."
The hypocrite, like he really cared what happened to her. The deep voice chuckled. It belonged to someone in the shadows, at the edge of my dream. Then a meaty hand thrust someone forward into the light. Artemis. her hands and feet bound in celestial bronze chains. I gasped. Her silvery dress was torn and tattered. Her face and arms were cut in several places, and she was bleeding.